Even in the dog days of summer, we may not pay much attention to how different life would be without refrigeration. But it turns out that when humans developed ways to cool things thousands of years ago, it set the stage for many of our most important discoveries and advances.
Helen Pevitt is curator of consumer technology at the Science Museum in London, and she's the author of the new book, Refrigerator, The Story of Cool in the Kitchen. Helen, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, nice to meet you, Judith.
So do we know when people first started trying to keep things cool?
It's kind of hard to say, but I'm guessing if you've had ice around, people were probably using it. So it's probably if you were in a cold area, so maybe Canada, Alaska, northern Russia, if you had ice around, then people are going to have been using it maybe to preserve what they've grown or caught locally. So it's, even though it's not recorded, people tend to think they've been using it for thousands of years.
And what were some of the earliest techniques? You mentioned ice, but you know that's not available to a lot of people in the world. What were some of the earliest techniques that were used that might have been used in warmer climates?
Yeah, people were quite cunning. So you could even produce ice in the desert, which sounds counterintuitive. The Persians, ancient Persians, built great big massive walls, even in the middle of the desert. And what they would do is put vessels behind the walls in the shadow, and at night time they'd put something inside that. They'd fill outside the vessel with water, and the evaporation would evaporate the water and leave ice behind. So even in the middle of the desert, you could produce a little bit of ice.
And when would what we might think of as modern refrigeration first become available?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. We've sort of got a taste for ice and for cooling things, and that really came from you in America, I think. Frederick Tudor, Ice King, started a trade in ice and cold ice in the early 19th century, and he was really the first one to see that there was a real value to selling ice, not just to cool your food and drink, but actually to use in food and drink to eat. So from then, really, it's really taken off. At some point in the mid-19th century, there was so much demand for ice, they actually couldn't meet that demand anymore. You couldn't just harvest it naturally from American lakes, or in Britain, you might harvest little scrappy bits from ponds over here. We didn't generate as much here. You had to look elsewhere. So they started looking to new steam-powered machinery, really, to produce ice in massive quantities. So from, I guess, mid-19th century, early Victorian period, that's when they start making these whacking great machines, refrigeration machines, ice-making machines that produce ice on a massive scale.
It seems like refrigeration has had the potential to make us healthier for all of the different foods that we're able to access, keeping it cool, presumably safe. Does what seems to be kind of common sense, does that actually bear out?
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. I think it probably does. It's sort of like a food hub, isn't it? You can almost hold the whole world in your fridge, if you want, in your kitchen. So it's given us unprecedented access to all sorts of different types of foods, fresh fruit, anytime you want it. So that's got to be a good thing in some ways. But, of course, hidden behind that is all the food miles, all this stuff is traveling. But in many ways, I suppose food's probably safer than it ever has been. It's kept cool pretty reliably all the way through that cold chain until it gets to us. So in some ways, I think that's probably true. Our food is probably safer than it ever has been. I suppose the downside of that is you kind of lose, I kind of feel that you've lost, or many of us have lost, the sense of what the classic knowledge we used to have about what is fresh. I don't always know if stuff I'm keeping in there is okay to still use, or if I should be chucking it away. I also think I'll probably rely on convenience foods more than I would do. Maybe I cook less, and maybe I produce more food waste. So I guess there's two things going on there. In some ways it's making it more healthy and more reliable for us, but you know, there's a downside. Like everything, like every technology, there's a bit of a downside as well.
We're talking with Helen Pevitt. She's curator of consumer technology at the Science Museum in London, and we're talking about refrigeration and the impact it's had on human development. And Helen, speaking of health, refrigeration is also a really important part of modern medicine. Can you give us some examples of that?
Yeah, I haven't, until I started researching for the book, I haven't even thought about it, but most of the vaccines, and I suppose even more crucially blood supplies that get that have to travel around the world, not just not around our countries, but also to some more remote places where maybe there's less of a power supply, they have to be kept at the right temperature, and once that temperature's exceeded, you can't use them anymore, so keeping them at a low temperature is crucial. So that I hadn't realised, I hadn't appreciated that things like any of the common vaccines we use today, HIV virus vaccine or any of the blood supplies, do have to be kept so cold.
And so that is interesting because you think of, say, those vaccines being taken to remote places in different countries where they are desperately needed, but where there might not be even reliable electricity. So what kind of refrigeration is possible in those pretty extreme conditions?
Really interesting. There have been some quite nifty gadgets that actually are sort of going back to old types of technology. So all the ice boxes we used to have in our home really started off in America, big insulated ice boxes that just kept things cool, not by extracting heat like our refrigerators do, but just by insulating against the outside temperature, a bit like a lunchbox, I suppose. Mm. All of those technologies start coming back into play. So in really remote places, they've started making quite sophisticated ice boxes that actually keep vaccines cold for maybe 3-4 days, so you can get them to where they need to be. And you can also get solar-powered ones as well. So we're kind of almost looking back to an older type of technology in the 21st century to keep vaccines cold enough to get them around the world.
And I hadn't thought much about it until reading your book, but all kinds of science depends on the ability to cool things. You mentioned space exploration and what also you call the world's largest and most famous science experiment, the Large Hadron Collider that found the Higgs particle. How does refrigeration make those two things possible?
Yeah, that's I suppose it is, isn't it? The biggest science experiment in the world, and this has been a big one made since. But the way that works is it has to keep the protons running around the great giant underground ring. I think it's about 27 kilometres long, this little ring that's running underneath CERN in Switzerland. To keep those protons on track and to keep on that search for particles they found like the Higgs, and also they're still searching for dark matter. You need to keep the circuit really, really cool. It's working by using powerful superconducting magnets, and they have to be super cold to just above absolute zero to work properly, which is colder than outer space. So, yeah, even within things like that, refrigeration is crucial to the success of those experiments.
And then also for people doing spacewalks, refrigeration is important.
Yeah, the thing about outer space is that obviously you can't convect your heat away. So any astronauts going out on a spacewalk, they are at the mercy of whether or not they're in the sunshine or in the shade. So you can alternate between freezing and overheating and boiling. So it's absolutely vital that what those astronauts do is underneath their main suit, they wear a sort of cooled liquid undergarment, which helps regulate their temperature. It's regulating between the hot and cold.
Wow, that's just fascinating. And like I said, nothing that I had thought about before reading your book. Well, we've talked a lot about the many positives to refrigeration. Are there negatives in refrigeration being such a prominent part of modern human day life?
I think it's got to be. Imagine if the power went down. We've seen when we've had power cuts before. You think about Hurricane Katrina, those unforgettable images of all the abandoned fridges left in the aftermath, just unusable because the power's gone down. And they've lost that access to that cold, reliable food supply. The minute the power goes down, I think we're in trouble. We've become so reliant on it and on the refrigerated cold chain all the way along. I think we'd be absolutely lost without it. It would be complete chaos if we suddenly found tomorrow we couldn't use it anymore. So we're super over-reliant on it, and I can't see that doing anything but increase.
Well, and also I'm wondering about environmental impact, that many appliances running worldwide, but also I'm sure that the technology is advanced, but I'm sure there's still a footprint to having just a simple home refrigerator.
Yeah, big footprints. There have been some real positives. So we've seen them become more environmentally efficient and more eco-efficient, and they use far less energy than they used to, and they've got safer refrigerants. But the downside is that we tend to be using bigger machines, and, of course, as other parts of the world get access to refrigeration and all the advantages it brings, safe food, freedom from having to go and shop every day, and all the advantages come with that downside. But actually, yeah, more and more of us are relying on using them. So, yeah, mixed blessing again.
Well, and as we wrap up, Helen, are there any exciting developments in refrigeration that you're seeing coming over the horizon?
Oh, wow. Do you know, for the last 10 years, I've been told that the next exciting development will be smart fridges, but I don't think that's where the real developments are going to be. I think we're going to see real changes in how they actually are powered. So I think we're going to see a generation of things like magnetic refrigerators, which move away from the whole engine compressor-powered refrigeration system and use smart, slightly savvier ways of cooling things inside.
Well, Helen, thank you so much. This was very interesting.
Judith, nice to talk to you today.
Helen Pevitt is Curator of Consumer Technology at the Science Museum in London. She joined us to talk about her new book, Refrigerator, The Story of Cool in the Kitchen.